I'm Chris Mandel, director of the Sedgwick Institute. Welcome to this installment of the Sedgwick Institute Live, where I profile influential thought leaders who make a difference and whose interests lie in the risk and insurance world. Today, I'm talking to Tom Parry, CEO and co-founder of the Integrated Benefits Institute. He has led the Institute since 1995, and in doing so, led research and thought leadership in important employee health and welfare-related issues since that time. Welcome to SI Live, Tom.
Thank you, Chris. Pleasure to be here.
Appreciate your time. Let's start with the personal. So tell me about yourself, your family, and what you like to do in your spare time.
Well, I'm married with two grown sons, one of whom runs IBI's benchmarking program, my older son, Skyler. My younger son has his PhD in biochemistry and works actually at a big law firm in their intellectual capital group here in San Francisco. My wife is a retired attorney, an environmental lawyer. My spare time, I spend a lot of time in the outdoors, particularly fly fishing. I'm an avid fly fisherman, and I've had the great opportunity to fish in places like Chile and Argentina and New Zealand and Russia and British Columbia and all over the western United States. So it's a great passion of mine that I will certainly continue on into the future with.
Oh, fabulous, fabulous. Well, I know there's no shortage of things to do in the Bay Area where I know you live, so when you get tired of that, I'm sure there'll be plenty of other things.
Indeed.
So let's talk now about your career. If you don't mind, just give me a brief overview of your career and beginning with your education.
I got my undergraduate and graduate degrees at the University of California at Berkeley. My PhD focus was in the public policy arena, although when I was doing my doctoral work, my research focused in the natural resources area. And so what I ended up doing was quite different, but still in the area of public policy. I spent 11 years as the research director at the California Workers' Comp Institute here in San Francisco. And then, as you said, in 1995, Bill Molman and I started IBI as an independent, not-for-profit organization. And today, 21 years later, although Bill has retired, has been retired for several years, IBI now has over 1,210 corporate sponsors of our work. Our members employ about 21 million people in the U.S. So we've been very fortunate in having a very broad reach for this message of the importance of health and productivity.
Very interesting. I didn't realize that you had come out of the work comp world, so we'll talk more about work comp here later in this interview.
Okay.
But I think it'd be good for our listeners to understand who the Integrated Benefits Institute is, what their mission and purpose is.
Yeah, we when I started IBI with Bill 21 years ago, coming out of the workers' comp arena, we of course had a broad risk management view of the world, and we had done there some of the earliest research on what was then called 24-hour coverage. So we actually, as a result of the first Clinton health care reform proposal, which, if you remember, one of the ideas was to take medical care out of workers' comp and put it into a national health care system in the early 90s. And we wanted to look at medical delivery and how it differed in workers' comp, or if it differed in workers' comp, compared to group health. So we actually did some research looking at medical delivery in California workers' comp compared to medical delivery in the group health system in California and found some very remarkable differences. Workers' comp looked far more like a sports medicine model of care, and I think that was perhaps because of disability outcomes that were so important in workers' comp. In the group health system, because there was no disability component, it was a longer duration, less intensive strategy in medical care. And that really got me thinking about a broader approach to looking at the workforce and its health and its impact. And that's really why and how we started IBI. So essentially, our work is really focused on, broadly speaking, the business value of workforce health. That is why health cannot be considered only a cost, but needs to be considered as a key part of a company's business strategy. So we work with about 1,000 employers as members, and on the what we call the supplier side of our membership, We have organizations in the health plan space, disability consultants. We have wellness companies, pharmaceuticals, TPAs. Sedgwick has been a long-standing member of IBI. Dave North was the chair of our board for a number of years. So the real goal is to kind of be in the middle of the marketplace, helping employers broaden their view of health and its impact and its value, and certainly helping our supplier members connect more effectively in that conversation with employers at the same time. And as an independent research group, we really are focused on the data and analytics around those issues.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned IDM, Integrated Disability Management, and since you did, I'm just curious, what are your thoughts about that? Because that, in my recollection, got its start about 20 years ago. It's morphed into a number of other things over time. I've actually run some of those programs under different headers, including total time off work type structures. But I think there's a great and broad view that IDM hasn't been all that successful. How do you see it?
You know, I think what I see in the evolution of this, back 20 years ago, as you point out, this discussion of IDM was a discussion of bringing both parts of the employer organization into a single organizational unit. That met a lot of resistance, both from the workers' comp side as well as from the group disability side. As we know, workers' comp has a very different structure than particularly short-term disability. So I think in some sense it didn't really go very far, and the next progression of the conversation was really looking at the impact of health on group disability. So workers' comp is kind of on the sideline. But I think what's happened over the last 5 to 10 years from the employer standpoint is a growing focus on absence, the recognition that without people at work, employers have a hard time being successful at their business. So the mm-hmm. broader absence management issues have really emerged. That's brought workers' comp back into the discussion. But I think what really is driving a different conversation today on the workers' comp side is, as we all know, workers' comp has really had two primary mechanisms to impact experience, safety and return to work. But there's a growing body of research evidence showing that the underlying health status of employees influences workers' comp experience, both by way of incidence as well as duration and cost. So the workers' comp people, I think, have a growing interest in better understanding what's going on in the health side of their company. At the very same time, people that manage health in the employer setting that are investing in wellness and well-being are looking for the payoff, and I think they're recognizing that the impact on occupational experience is one of the outcomes of better health. So I think there's a different and new conversation between the OC and the non-OC side, but I think the focus is less on creating an organizational, a single organizational unit, and more on sharing and integrating data and information to help both sides do a better job of management. So I think it's really the focus on absence and then the linkages across those programs that really is emerging as the right conversation, because it's all the same people, and mm-hmm. it's just a matter of how we bring these things together.
So if integration then may not be the right target in light of that opinion. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think it's probably more coordination. You know, I think people spend a lot of time trying to break down organizational barriers from the structural standpoint. And I think they learned it made far more sense to share information and coordinate programs than it did to try to break everything down and create new structures to manage things under one organizational unit.
Yeah. Well said. So what are some of the more important issues that IBI has tackled in the recent years, and why do you think they're the important ones?
You know, in our early tenure, we did quite a bit of work on looking at the impact of health and health risk on outcomes like disability and absence. There really hadn't been a lot of quantitative work in linking those programs because they're managed in separate silos, and it's not an insignificant challenge to integrate that data and look at the causal relationships between health and disability and absence. I think from there we really focused on productivity. How do you bring the productivity conversation into this dimension? As we all know, most employers pay their employees wage replacement payments when they're not at work, whether it's disability and workers' comp or short-term disability or sick leave or paid family leave. But there wasn't as much work done on the productivity implications. That is the additional cost the employer bears when either people aren't at work or they're in poor health and not performing at work, which in the research literature we've termed presenteeism. So the productivity piece has certainly been a big part of our quantitative work. And I think probably that in more recent years, the issues of how do CFOs really see the issue of health, what's their strategy, particularly post the Affordable Care Act, and how broadly are they thinking about health in their organizations? And most recently, we're engaged in new work looking at the impact of health on the top line. That is to say, do healthy employees really do a better job of driving business performance through the operational metrics that they affect in their organization? So that's new work. We published some work about a year ago with Wayne Burton at American Express in some of their programs, and we're just beginning a new project with several employers to try to connect those dots. Because if we can really expand the conversation about health beyond simply the bottom line cost impact, even when we include disability and absence and productivity, if we can better understand how the health of people drive their business performance, then the conversation about the value of health changes rather dramatically, particularly to CFOs and CEOs.
Mm-hmm. I can really identify with that because having come from a background in enterprise risk management, the ultimate question that I always focused on was how does the management of risk drive performance
exactly
and affect
right.
performance. It wasn't about how efficiently you buy insurance, although that's a part of it. It was a much bigger question. And the premise was that, you know, if you fail, it's probably because you didn't manage one or more risks very well.
Exactly right. And I think, today, as we look at what's emerging right now in the healthcare discussion, this idea of the difference between healthcare costs and their impact and health and its impact becomes really important to employers deciding what they're going to do in the future. So I think what we try to do is really make that distinction between health and health care, because ultimately if we don't improve the health of American employees and American citizens, then I don't care how you structure and finance a healthcare system, will ultimately fail if people become in poorer health.
Mm-hmm. So this triggers a number of thoughts, but one of them is, as you well know, I'm sure, Sedgwick's done a tagline is that it's in the claim and productivity business. I'm wondering how you think about us, Sedgwick, that is, claim management services, and what are your thoughts about TPAs in the managed claim world and how it affects this overall focus on employee health and welfare?
Yeah. Well, I've known Dave North for a long, long time. I met Dave probably maybe 18 years ago. And we all know that Dave has been very influential in building Sedgwick as the dominant force in absence management. You know, I think such companies as Sedgwick have really an important role to play, not only in just managing claims, but in helping employers really understand that piece of the puzzle. Because regardless of how you structure healthcare, ultimately the issue of absence and productivity always stays with the employer. And I think companies like Sedgwick and other TPAs really are in the position to help employers understand the impact and importance of that outcome, and then help them think through what that means to their health strategy. So it's challenging because we know that world has grown up in their silo, and they often really aren't connected to the traditional healthcare discussion. But I think what we see going forward is the opportunity for such companies to be far more influential in the health and health strategy conversation than they have been in the past because they have focused on the absence and disability management issues. So I think Sedgwick and such companies are in a very important position in broadening this conversation about health and helping employers understand the impact of these outcomes on not only their bottom line, but their top line as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, in light of the election and the reference to health care, I'm wondering, what do you think about the future of the Affordable Care Act and more broadly, federal involvement in health care? I know that's a huge, hairy topic, but if you
it
just
is.
Kind of keep
and,
it.
And I think what's happening, Chris, is the rhetoric has gotten in the way of the reality. And by that I mean, if you look at the ACA and what really made the ACA possible, particularly around the issue of pre-existing conditions, once you cover pre-existing conditions, then you have to have a way of mandating coverage because you have to get younger, healthier people in the system to help underwrite the cost of people with pre-existing conditions. So unless the administration is willing to throw out the pre-existing condition coverage issues, which clearly they're not for political reasons, then it puts them really in a corner around, well, if we don't have some mandate, if we don't engage younger, healthier people, we're going to see premiums skyrocket. And politically speaking and economically speaking, that's not a good idea. I think what will happen is as I look at Tom Price, who will probably be the next director of Health and Human Services, Tom Price is a physician. He is a strong believer in individual choice. He's a strong believer in consumerism and health savings accounts. So I think what we'll see is this push to put more and more on the backs of individuals to make health care decisions. I am not a big believer in consumerism without support of employees making health care decisions and navigating the health care system. We, as part of our work here at IBI, reviewed almost 70 peer-reviewed research publications around consumer-driven health. And what you find is when you shift those costs to employees, in the short term, healthcare costs go down almost by definition. But the research tells us that in the reduction of healthcare, that both unnecessary and necessary care is reduced. Even when preventive services are covered first dollar, they're reduced. And what that translates into poor health. And with poor health, eventually will come higher health care costs. But in the near term, with poor health, will become more absence, more disability, reduced performance at work, which is in no one's interest.
Mm-hmm. You know, I heard a brief discussion yesterday with the Republican leadership about how they don't want to just tackle the ACA issue. They want to tackle Medicare as well. And I don't know about doing that simultaneously. It seems like you've doubled the size of the problem.
Well, I think that's exactly right.
And decrease the likelihood you'll be successful.
Now, I think from the big difference, and I think this is something that a lot of people don't think through, the big difference in the two systems, of course, is people on Medicare are, by and large, retired. They are not mm-hmm. part of the productive capacity of the American economy. And that should really mean something from the standpoint of how we think about health policy. And I think to throw those together as if they're the same is both a strategic mistake and an economic and public policy mistake. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'll take on both at the same time, but I think the political philosophy around consumerism and the like is certainly part of the conversation from the Republican leadership standpoint in both traditional health care as well as Medicare.
Yeah. My initial reaction was that maybe there's a hidden agenda there that if you try to tackle two beasts at the same time, it would be in the interest of just maintaining the status quo. But you would hope that's not what they're after, you know?
Yeah, I completely. And I think, you know, from the political standpoint, you know, something like 20 million people have gotten health care in the last 8 years that didn't have it before. And that's a big political block to take on. I don't think the administration wants to anger 20 million people and having them lose their health care or have costs that go up so much they can't afford it. So there are real challenges to face in health care. I think fundamentally, if we don't do something about health, if we don't focus a lot of attention on how do we work with people to improve their health, then it's not going to matter how we finance health care and who we cover. It's just going to be economically unaffordable.
Yeah, well said. So in light of these and other issues, Tom, where do you see or how do you see the mission of IBI changing? And where are they going over the next 10 years? What are they going to focus on?
You know, we at our board meeting this past summer, we spend 2.5 days at a summer strategic planning retreat with our board. And the conversation over the last couple of years has been, look, the issues going forward are going to be issues and in some sense tension between this consumer view of health and the employer interest in health. And so the work of IBI really will focus on how do we better understand those two pieces and how do we better understand and do work which shows how those can be aligned in common interests. And I think the common interests are it's good for employees to be healthy in their personal life as well as their work life. It's certainly good for employers to have a healthy workforce. So I think our work is really going to focus on how those two things come together, particularly around this question of the business value of health, because without that component, it really is hard to understand how and why we invest in health and what we really get out of it from the employer standpoint.
So, you know, as we get towards the end of this, Tom, I wonder, and I want to come back to the work comp issue for a minute, because I know when you and I first talked a few years ago, when I first came to Sedgwick, we were talking about whether IBI was going to take a greater interest in the work comp world. And as you may know, I'm sure you do, there's been lots of noise in the last year or two about the dysfunction of the 50-state system. There's been some concern about potential for federalization. I think the election has probably mitigated most of that. But I still wonder, you know, about the future of the system and how it might change. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, I think you're right, Chris. I think with the administration, there's not a lot of appetite for federalizing anything. There's a very strong states' rights perspective, I think, in the president-elect and his administration. But that doesn't solve the problem of workers' comp. And, you know, growing up in California from the standpoint of working in workers' comp, I think it's a microcosm of some of the issues, particularly around litigation and the lack of clarity around treatment and outcomes and the like. So, and I think the workers' comp world needs to pay attention to that because administrations, by definition, are short-term things. And the next administration may be very different in their perspective about, you know, federalizing it into a single workers' comp program. I think the ultimate goal is to have safe, healthy, productive workplaces and workforces. And I think the workers' comp world needs to kind of reach out to the other parts of the system, including group health, and certainly including employers, to say, how can we create that? How can we create a world that employees are healthy, safe at work, and productive at work? And we all have a role in that. So how can the workers' comp world participate in that conversation and not fight about whether a condition was work-related or not work-related? That kind of misses the point, I think, of what we ultimately need to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, we're almost out of time, Tom, but I want to know, since you're retiring from IBI in April of next year, what are your plans for the future?
Well, I certainly will continue to I haven't spent 21 years working on these issues to essentially just walk away. So I'll probably spend about a third of my time working on these issues. I will certainly keep working with IBI as President Emeritus and some of our other members on these issues. I've got a new granddaughter arriving in February, so my wife and I will be participating in her child care, which I'm very excited about. And I will actually start working in the Oakland school system here in the Bay Area to tutor. Our church has a very active program in tutoring in the underprivileged part of Oakland and Oakland schools, so I'll be participating in that. And then I hope to do a little more traveling and certainly a bit more fly fishing in the future. So there's a lot to do. I'm looking forward to the next chapter, but I will continue to be involved in the health and productivity discussion nationally.
Fantastic. I don't know what we'd do without you.
I appreciate that, Chris. Thank you.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners before we close this out?
You know, I would, I guess, only say for all those people that work on these issues, they're really important issues. You do great work. You do important work. But it's really important to think broadly and holistically as we go forward. The answers are not going to be found in working in individual silos. They're going to be found in working together with the ultimate goal of having a healthy, productive workforce and a healthy, productive economy in the U.S. So that's kind of my charge to the listeners today.
Very good. Well, thanks, Tom, for your time and insights. It's been a pleasure talking to you today, and all the best as you move into the next phase of your life.
Thanks so much, Chris. Good talking with you. Take care.
To our listeners, you can find my and Dr. Richard Victor's speaking and writing schedules, as well as other resources, at CedricInstitute.com. Please consider joining the Institute's LinkedIn group titled Cedric Institute, where we dialogue daily on issues of importance to stakeholders in the risk and insurance world. Till next month, when we'll have our next installment of SLI Live, hope you stay tuned. In the meantime, I urge you to use your expertise and influence to make a difference wherever and whenever you can to make this industry better.